Radio.
Hello and welcome to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast to bring you beginner and advanced knowledge of cryptocurrency and blockchain, analyses of cryptocurrency markets, and discussions on growing a business within the crypto space. Stay tuned and stay CryptoCurrent.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of CryptoCurrent. This is Adam. Today I'm here with Richard and our guest, James Oliver. Richard and I ended up meeting James in April as we had some questions regarding compliance and regulation within the crypto space, in which James is well-versed, and he ended up answering all of our questions. It was really great, and the meeting actually ended pretty synergistically for all of us, as James ended up becoming an investor with Astra.
Well, thank you for having me, Adam. I'm excited to be here. As you know, the crypto space is very exciting. It was a great thing for me to meet with you guys, as I'm a hodler at heart. So to have like a trader on the team that can help me continue to make money in a bear market cycle and through the dips, and I don't have to worry about trying to learn new technical analysis and fighting against the whales and the experts in the space. I can kind of continue to do what I do, and you know, we can team up and move through the space together. I'm excited.
Thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having being a part of this show today. So can you please give us a little background about you? How did you get into the space, or how did you even become a lawyer?
Okay, so I mean, I'm born and raised in New Orleans, Edna Carver High School, Dillard University, sociology, criminal justice major, and then graduated from Southern University in Baton Rouge from law school. I jumped into the personal injury space through the experience through life. So that's how I make my money. Previous to getting into cryptocurrency, I used to invest in real estate, try to set up like supplemental passive income for myself. So then I think it's Thanksgiving 2016. My little cousin, who was an engineer student at LSU at the time, always respected his mind, very smart kid, asked me, was like, what do you know about Bitcoin? And I'm like, at the time, I knew nothing. It's referenced from the movie Dope. I knew a little bit about the Silk Road, but I've never been like a computer person or scared to get on a dark web or anything like that. So
right.
I didn't know much about, actually my most personal experience with it was my dad's a huge online poker player.
Okay.
And in 2009, when I went to law school, he was playing party poker online, and then new legislation came out. They kicked him off, and they're like, Louisiana residents can't upload money from your account anymore. It's illegal. And so he contacted Party Poker, and Party Poker was like, hey, we can still like, you have you as a client, you just have to submit Bitcoins. So my dad, not being a computer person, called me. He was like, what do you know about these Bitcoins? And I Googled it. It's all negative. It's all, you know, drug trafficking.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, look, I'm in law school right now. I'm not messing with this. I don't have time to learn. You're on your own. And so we didn't play with it. So to come back around full circle, now we're in 2016, my cousin's like, what do you know about Bitcoin? And I do my research, and I'm like, man, if we only had put the effort and time in back then, this whole conversation would be on a different platform right
now. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting about that? It's like many people, I've actually spoken to a lot more people than I had previously thought, that their initial involvement with Bitcoin did come through online poker, and not just Louisiana residents, but domestically, nationwide. So it's kind of like this interesting little, commonality, rather, where a lot of people did get that intro through online poker, which is, I think, kind of funny.
So yeah, walk us through. So now you are diving deeper in 2016 with your cousin learning about cryptocurrency. What happened next?
Well, I think I fell down the same rabbit hole that most people that find themselves falling down when you get into this space. So, you know, I joined the crypto Twitter world. I'm on Telegram, Reddit. I joined Steemit. I'm on YouTube. And I'm just trying to learn as much as I can. And it's so much information, and it's so many different avenues that you can fall into, that it just took some time. You had to embrace this new technology. I've never been like a person that built my own computers growing up and played computer games. So the technical side of like actually building mining rigs and how blockchain technology works was all new to me. Then I'm not a financial analyst. So the investment side of it and onboarding my money and tax laws and stuff associated with capital gains and all of that was brand new to me. So it was like this space was in its infancy. So the information was there. It was coming from so many different sources, not streamlined to you. It wasn't like mainstream media. You couldn't just go to the store and buy a book. You know, there was no idiot's guide to Bitcoin at the time. You know, it was just a whole bunch of idiots on YouTube that you had to filter through to find good information.
Right.
So.
Well, it sounds like what you're implying, which is something that I would definitely relate to, is that when you got in this space, when you were first really introduced in 2016, you found this little world that was its own ecosystem with advocates and all these really intelligent people, and you're finding that there is this whole dimension of information that you were not previously familiar with, right? There was all of these things to learn in this space that was not just something that you can look at and sort of brush off and kind of pin it as being anything less than innovative and intelligent. It was this space that was filled with information that was new, but at the same time very intriguing. Is that correct?
I take it even a step further. For me, it had like a fraternal nature to it. Mm. Like once you got past the fluff and the surface level and you dug deep and you got to the good information and you started following the right people, then you notice that a lot of people out here doing very selfless acts in this space, just trying to innovate blockchain.
Right.
And then aside from that, it has its own language. You know, as you hop into the Reddit and the Twitter feeds and you start using words like hodl, that became a thing that you can use when you met someone in public and be like, dude, are you a hodler? And if he looks at me confused, then I know like you're not on the same level with me. You're not as deep as me.
Right.
So and if I ask you that question and you respond appropriately, then we can have conversations all day.
Right.
You know, now we can exchange information. We're part of the same club here. We're all jumping into an innovative space at what I consider very ground level.
And quickly, for those who do not know what hodling is, can you break that down for them, please?
Okay. It just means to hold on for dear life is the meme that's out here floating right now. It actually came from a Reddit post where it was a typo. She the author of the post meant to type hold, came out hodl, and it kind of the crypto space just kind of ran with it. So it's just
took it and ran. Yep.
Yeah, it's a philosophy that you buy these crypto right now and you hold on to it for the long term. This is not a short term goal. This is not, you know, I'm gonna buy it at 5,000 and sell it at 7,500. No, right. Buy it at 5,000 and forget that you have it.
Right. Well, and so it's interesting. It's like what I think what's extra poignant right now with this old meme now. I mean, the term hodl is several years in the making at this point, and it's like this came from the advice of this author on Reddit that was telling people, or at least trying to persuade people, to hold their Bitcoin, which at the time was going through a very harsh bear market. Unlike anything that the space had seen up to that point, there were many people that were selling because they thought this was the end. They thought they had missed it. And we are talking about Bitcoin well under $1,000. And so I just think it's extra pertinent right now to kind of throw that in there as we find ourselves 8-9 months in since December 17th, right, when CME futures came out and futures were now enabled with Bitcoin. We find ourselves 8 months into this bear market that, just like many of the past, although it may seem different, comparable and very similar to any of the past, is filled with people high doubts, with people are finding themselves worried about the future, worried just like they had been in years past, just with different people, that this was now the it, that Bitcoin is now topped off. And so I just think it's a little, it's important for those of us who don't know, for our listeners who may not know where the term hodl came from or why it came from, to just maybe try to find some similarities between back then and now. It's like, if you can just imagine what it may have felt like to sell your Bitcoin when you thought it was the end at $260, you know, where are those people now? What are they saying now? So just some food for thought.
Right. So James, getting back to an earlier topic that you discussed with mining, can you tell us, how did you get into mining and like, where has that led you to today?
Okay. So the same cousin that asked me what I know about Bitcoin, once I jumped in, he became a miner. And when I say mining, we focus on like, my first rig was a 6-card GPU Ethereum mining rig. I did not build it. I just paid him to do it. I put it in my house. We plugged it in and we let it run. I knew nothing. He took care of everything for me. So as a control freak, that made me a little bit uncomfortable. I decided to go ahead and put in the time and effort it took to learn how to manage my own rig, and then I started building my own.
Right.
When we first started, we used 6-card mining rigs because that's the only motherboards that were available to us. And now the space is starting to catch up with the technology, and, you know, we have motherboards now that hold up to 21 cards. The power supplies are better. The cords are better. Everything is more streamlined. There's websites that have just mining equipment for us now versus having a piece by piece through Newegg and Amazon along the way in the very beginning. So I'm watching the space develop. I've been in the mining space now for 10 months, and I really just jumped in, like I said, passive income, passive supplemental income. So I mentioned earlier that I am a real estate investor. And to me, my standard for a good real estate deal is something that would bring me in somewhere between 8 to 12% return on interest annually. That's a good investment for me on a real estate deal. Well, when I started jumping into the numbers of mining, I was looking at somewhere between 10 to 12% return on interest monthly. And that was conservative numbers. And again, yeah, at current today's prices.
Right.
So if you're a hodler at heart and you believe that this technology is at its infancy and is going to continue to grow, then to collect that 10% to 12% ROI monthly now and hodl it until it's exponential growth was the plan. It's why I got into mining.
Yeah. Well, so stepping back a little bit, as far as the entire crypto space goes, which I think we've all been implying and even explicitly saying in this episode, is evolving, right? Just like mining was when you got into it, it's very different now than it had been. The crypto space is obviously very different now than it had been when the HODL Reddit post came. But so considering the entire space, what are some things you're most excited about within cryptocurrency as it sits today?
I think use case blockchain, the dApps that we invested in ICOs in early 2017 that are finally coming out with products that people are going to start using. When you're talking about how the space has evolved, onboarding for me when I first jumped in was Coinbase only. Yeah. I was so excited when Gemini came out because there was a dip I wanted to buy and Coinbase went down and I didn't get to participate. So I was like, I need another exchange. I need another way to buy Bitcoin. And then Gemini Exchange came out and I was like, okay, there we go. Well, now we're at Robinhood.
Yeah.
Has like what 21 coins offered to like 21 different states right now. Everyone's not on board.
Right. Abra as well with 20 coins. Yep, at 20 plus.
Coinbase is dropping information every day now that they're gonna add another coin and another coin. So there's like, you know, I was one of those users. I had a Binance account. I had a KuCoin account. I used Poloniex. I used Bittrex. I mean, I had to join every exchange needed to make sure that I had access to the coins that I wanted to participate in.
Right.
And everybody wasn't everywhere. There was no central way to do that. So I'm excited about this cross-platform exchanges, these decentralized exchanges that are allowing people to onboard one time with fiat and then control their wallet and portfolio from one easy user face. So that's the thing. Like I said, no technical background. Explaining Bitcoin to my parents was difficult. So trying to explain them how to move private and public keys was absolutely out of the question. They're like, listen, if we're going to do this, you're going to do it for us.
Right.
So I'm excited about finally having like easy to use apps like Robinhood, where like just like you would buy a stock that you wanted to buy, you can now purchase a cryptocurrency and it'll save right there in your wallet or in your app or on your computer, just like anything else.
Right.
So that's exciting. I think mass adoption needs that before people are more comfortable.
Definitely. And kind of what you're saying with speaking to your parents or speaking to people in your family who either ask you about mining or how they can start investing into some of these different coins as well. What is something that is in this space as you start to evolve and get more into it and you're looking at all the different mining opportunities or even investing into some of these different coins, what are, besides the adoption that you just said with these different platforms, like, is there like a big project that you are aware of that you're like, wow, that's like really exciting. That could be like a game changer, or anything in the space along those lines.
All right. Remember, this is never financial advice, right? I think Salt Lending and other platforms like that are going to be huge in this space.
Describe Salt Lending for those of our viewers.
Okay. So what Salt Lending does is it allows you to leverage your crypto assets without selling your coins. So, for instance, in early December, when things were at all-time highs, I had cryptocurrency that I believe in long term.
Right.
But I also have gains that I would have loved to be able to reinvest into other opportunities. And so I was faced with the choice then to either sell some of the crypto that I bought early on, you know, take the realized gains, pay the taxes on it, and then use that to invest in other opportunities, or just hold on and not and just calculate those unrealized gains.
Right.
So then here comes Salt Lending and says, okay, well, look, deposit your cryptocurrency with us. We'll lend you fiat money on your cryptocurrency. And as long as you pay your mortgage or your bill every month, and then you don't have to worry about it. Your cryptocurrency is safe. Once you pay back your loan, we'll return your cryptocurrency for you. So now you get to keep your gains over the next 12 months and still reinvest your profits from the cryptocurrency into other projects, or, you know, buy a house for your family, get married, with the big expenses that you may have personally in your life. So I know so many people that when they got into this space, they went all in.
Yeah.
Like, they were living off of crypto.
Right.
And so now Salt Lending is making that a more viable option for people, so that it's not this huge gamble where you literally just put a second mortgage out on your house, and if crypto does something crazy in the next 2 months, you're in trouble.
Right. No, I mean, Salt Lending and other comparable lending platforms, I think, did just exactly that. And they solved this problem that consumers were demanding. It's people like yourself and like many, many other people, hodlers, as we've spoken about, found themselves with on some spectrum, a lot of valuable cryptocurrency that they still continue to believe in the future of it, but they wanted to be able to use that in some capacity without having to sell that. And so those lending platforms are great. And that is something that was even new to last year. I mean, we keep speaking about things that have just come out in this space. And I think it's necessary for us, everybody involved within the crypto space, to use that and take that perspective from time to time. Even though, I mean, right now, the entire space is evolving, and it continues to as it always has done. It's like every day, every month, every year, the space is evolving. It will continue to evolve, and it'll continue to improve. And although crypto right now is arguably the most mainstream it's ever been after the historic, unprecedented growth of the market last year, if we're just using a historic analysis, it'd be rational, at the very least, to ascertain that the space will continue to improve. It will continue to evolve. New projects will continue to come out, meet consumer demands, and allow blockchain to become what will allow blockchain to rise to the potential that I think a lot of people see in it. Allow blockchain to become applicable and usable by an entire community. And so I just think it's important to, again, even though crypto has, some would argue, many would argue that crypto has topped out in December of last year, that was the end, right? Just as it has been the end many and many times before, I think this perspective is necessary. Although, you know, especially in the times that we're in now. So, James, I think I speak for both of us in just thanking you for coming in today. And just before you leave off, is there any final thought you would like to leave with our viewers?
A couple. Just to follow up on what you just said, follow the money. That's always been my philosophy when I do research on new projects and new things that I want to get involved with. Follow the money. So all throughout 2017, if you followed the media and the news, you would see people like Jamie Dimon say Bitcoin is a fraud. Don't get involved. You see people like Warren Buffett telling you not to mess with this Bitcoin thing. It's just a bubble. They compared it to the tulip crisis. Okay. At the same time, if you followed the money, you saw Chase spend $600 million on research and development on blockchain technology.
Right.
You saw Warren Buffett's companies under Berkshire Hathaway all doing the same thing. They're all joining consortiums. They're all joining Bitcoin groups, and they're spending money on research and development to make their processes internally more efficient. Right. Now, they're not invested in Bitcoin, but they're invested in blockchain.
In this space. And arguably one of the most notable, one of the most recognizable names in the financial world, Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs has acquired Circle, has begun at least probing their customers on their interest in Bitcoin and how they could integrate a system that would allow their customers to purchase said Bitcoin. So,
and on the legal side, I'm watching my emails change now. I have CLEs available to me as a lawyer to teach us about new regulation and legislation coming down in the blockchain space and how we can protect our clients and the laws and stuff that we have to follow. Okay. In addition to that, you see all the patents being filed by the big boys because they want to control the onboarding process when it does open up to the retirement funds and the 401ks. Goldman Sachs wants that to come through them. You know, they don't want you to go through another company. So they're filing the patents to make sure that this crypto onboarding process goes through a couple of people. So I said, follow the money. So that was big for me. I knew blockchain wasn't going away. When companies like Ripple come out, which is just, it's not decentralized at all. But it's necessary, and I understand that it's innovative still, and it's going to help a lot of companies grow and be more efficient. It's not the blockchain community that we are a part of in the HODLer community. That's not what we do. But I understand that in that space, that that's necessary as well. So that just makes me keep a very optimistic thought that blockchain is not going anywhere. Lastly, I don't know how, if you're new or you're old into crypto, I tell you to be secure. I entered this space with the attempt into being as secure as possible. I learned how to make paper wallets. I bought hardware wallets. I use desktop wallets, Exodus and Jax. And yet I was still hacked and my funds were still stolen. And I don't leave funds on exchanges unless absolutely necessary, because I've been in a time where there was nowhere to pull it. You know, there was no wallet to take some of these coins off. You had to leave it on exchanges. Outside of that, I try to put everything in a very safe place offline. Still were hacked. So.
Yeah, well, just to tie it into the theme of this episode, right, of evolution within the crypto space, that is still something that is so essential. That is still one of the largest, I would argue, problems with cryptocurrency that has yet to be solved. This system that is so vulnerable to hacking and to stealing other people's assets and funds is a problem that I would at least argue that has to be solved for further progression long term, because you're right. You know, it's even taking the highest precautionary measures still sometimes will leave you falling short. You know, and that's a huge issue.
And so, you know, in my efforts after being hacked to become as secure as possible, I realized how complicated and intense that process was. So then the estate planner in me goes, "What if something happened to me? How would my family get access to all of these funds that are across these different exchanges with different passwords, two-factor authentication to my cell phone, which then has another password, which has an email access with another password?" And I was like, my mom and dad don't even know what Bitcoin is.
How are they going to get all
right.
these
How are they going to get my funds for
right.
me? You
yeah.
know?
Right.
So I've made it my goal and mission as an attorney in the estate planning side to try to make that as streamlined as possible so somebody that has some serious assets in cryptocurrency and is worried about making sure their family have access to that. Trying to develop a system where you can come to me, we can secure a certain level of security through me, and then we give a jump drive to someone else that has the rest of your private keys or the access to the two-factor authentication. So
right.
that when something happens to you, I have the information on who to get the jump drive from. We meet together and we can do some estate planning to make sure that your assets get to the appropriate people.
Right. Well, as we speak about this, you are certainly not the only person that is dealing with these problems. And so I think my hope is that there are companies, right? There are players within the blockchain and crypto space that are actively working to solve these issues that we are just possibly not aware of yet. And so,
And also, if you are having troubles with this, obviously James is a great person to try to get in contact with that could help you get through a lot of these issues. So
we will leave James' contact info at the end of this podcast.
Well, I appreciate that, guy.
Thank you again, man, for coming on today.
Yeah,
we really appreciate you.
I'm willing to come back, man.
Hey, yeah, there we go.
Let's touch base in a couple
right,
months.
Yeah, absolutely.
See where we are.
Absolutely.
Yes, expect James to come back in the future.
James, one final thing. Can you please give us a website where our listeners can get more information?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm at www.jolawoffices.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at Attorney Oliver, attorneyoliver.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will see you next week.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of CryptoCurrent. For more information on this episode and all of our episodes, please visit us at www.crypto-current.co. Stay up to date with the latest news in cryptocurrency by signing up for our newsletter. You will receive a daily email Monday through Sunday that is personalized and curated content specific to you and your interest, powered by artificial intelligence. Get your tickets today. We are throwing the first cryptocurrency and blockchain conference in New Orleans in March 2019. You can get your tickets today at www.crypto-current.co.
This has been another episode of CryptoCurrent, bringing you one step closer to becoming a crypto and blockchain aficionado. We look forward to giving you the latest in crypto news and analyses next week. Stay CryptoCurrent.